two, workshop to consider draft triennial review priority project list, Alita Magnum.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chairman Corbett and members of the board. I'm Alita Mangelstorff, and I'm the supervisor of the planning unit here at the Regional Water Board office. We're here today to, in a workshop, to look at staff's proposed priority ranking of basin plan, potential basin plan amendment projects to be addressed over the next three-year period as part of our 2014 triennial review. In my presentation, I'm going to spend just a couple of minutes giving an introduction to the basin plan so that we're all clear about what it is that we're potentially looking to amend, talk about the 2014 triennial review schedule, give you an update of the 2011 triennial review projects and the priority rank, the high priority projects that came out of that review, review the suggestions that we got this year through our solicitation process, and then go ahead and present the staff's draft proposed priority ranking. I'll just mention that associated with this project are also editorial revisions to chapters 1 and 2 of the basin plan. So in March, which is our intended hearing date for the triennial review, in addition to bringing you a proposed priority ranking list to be for your consideration and adoption, we'll also bring those editorial amendments for your adoption. So just as an introduction, what we're talking about is the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast region. This is the body of our regulation that we implement here in the North Coast region for the protection of water quality. We are given direction from the Port of Cologne Water Quality Control Act, the state law that directs us to develop this basin plan. And we also implement the federal law, the Clean Water Act, through these regulations contained in our basin plan. To be clear, our basin, the Clean Water Act directs policies and regulations or water quality protection requirements for surface waters, whereas the Port of Cologne directs water quality protection measures for all the state waters, groundwater, surface water, and marine water. Both the laws, both the state and the federal law, require that we review our basin plan periodically. The Clean Water Act in particular talks about every 3 years, so on a three-year schedule, we go through this process called the triennial review. And ultimately, what we're looking for through this triennial review process is to identify the areas of the basin plan that need revision or update, or policies or standards that need to be added to the basin plan. And in particular, they require a full amendment process. So these are not, though we are the planning unit and we consider lots of high priority projects associated with water quality protection, it's only the projects that require an amendment of the basin plan that fall out of this particular review process. And as a reminder, our last training review is in 2011, so we're here on schedule to do our training review. So on Monday, we released this document here, and there are copies of it in the front for those of you who'd like to have a copy in front of you. I presume each of the board members has a copy. It's a table which lists all the projects, both from 2011 and those that we received this year, and does two things, well, several things. Generally identifies the project, lets you know whether or not it was on the 2011 training review, and then tells you, ranks them in categories of high, medium, and low, and then gives them specific numbers. Today we're having a public workshop describing the process that we've gone through to generate this list. On Friday we'll release a staff report that goes into some detail describing each of the projects and the process we went through to rank them. That staff report will be out for a 45-day public comment period. We will expect comments to come back in on January 9th. And again, chapters, editorial revisions in chapter 1 and 2 will be part of that package. So we'll have public comments due on January 9th. Then by February 25th, we will have reviewed all of those comments, produced a final proposed project writing and completed the editorial revisions for chapters 1 and 2, developed a response to comments document, and then come before you in the on March 12th during your regularly scheduled board meeting for March to ask for your consideration in the hearing. So I'm just going to give you a quick status update on the 2011 high priority projects. These are all projects that you're familiar with. We've given you many updates regarding them over the last 3 years. At the top of the list is the Elk River Sediment TMDL Action Plan and Water Quality Standard Review. Then the Freshwater Creek Sediment TMDL, the Eel River Temperature TMDL. These change, the yellow color indicates that this is a project that we've completed. The Mattole River Temperature TMDL Action Plan, the Navarro River Temperature TMDL Action Plan, Russian River Pathogen TMDL, Laguna de Santa Rosa TMDL, Temperature Implementation Policy, Groundwater and Surface Water Quality Objectives and Implementation Plan. I'll say more about this in a minute, but Jeremiah was referring to this in the groundwater panel presentation. This is the item on the 2011 triennial review that we've split into two projects, phase one and phase two. Phase one is a chemical water quality objective update amendment, and it most particularly addresses an update to our chemical constituents objective and proposes adding a groundwater toxicity objective. And then phase, and that is in blue to indicate that we are nearing completion of that project, and before the end of the fiscal year, we intend to have that before you in the hearing. And then phase two is the development of a groundwater protection policy. And this would be a project in which we would look at describing our approach to controlling the discharge of waste to land and its potential impact on groundwater, deal with salt and nutrients for those basins that have not developed a salt and nutrient management plan under the recycled water policy, which is most of our basins except for the Santa Rosa Basin. And then there are a couple of other proposals that came out of our 2014 solicitation that could be included in this project that I'll describe in a minute. Also on the 2011 list was the development of a revision of dissolved oxygen objectives for free-flowing streams, which is a project that we will combine with the phase one water quality objective project because that involves revision of water quality objectives in chapter 3. And then also dissolved oxygen objectives for wetlands and lakes. And finally on the 2011 list is the development of a restoration policy. And that also is something we hope to bring, we'll be bringing in January, so before the end of the fiscal year. There are a couple of the low and medium priority projects from the 2011 review that I wanted to highlight for a couple of reasons here. One was the on-site waste treatment system policy. It did not rise high on our priority list in 2011, but did have dates associated with it that required us to have something adopted by this year. And so we brought that, it was intended originally to be combined with our groundwater protection policy, but we stripped that out of that phase and brought that to you earlier this year for adoption to meet the deadlines from the state board. There also was a project on the 2011 list to revise the surface water toxicity objectives to deal with what really turns out to be a punctuation issue that changed the meaning of the objective. And we've also included that into our water quality objective update amendment, which will come to you in June. There's the requirements under the recycled water policy to develop salt nutrient management plans was low on our list, relying on the state board's direction. And we've decided in consultation with the state board that much of the work needed under the recycled water policy can be done in our region through the development of a programmatic approach for those water, for those groundwater basins that don't have the same capacity as the Santa Rosa plain does. And so that will be as part of our groundwater protection policy, we'll describe that programmatic approach. And then the last project I'll mention was the need to update Table 2-1, the beneficial use designations. And in particular, the one suggestion was that we designate groundwater beneficial uses to individual groundwater basins. And so that is something that we're going to propose we incorporate into our groundwater protection policy, particularly focusing on those medium priority basins, those 8 basins that DWR has identified in our region. So this year we've gone through a pretty inclusive, lengthy, broad solicitation process. There have been a couple of information items. There was an executive officer's report describing our interest in receiving projects. We had 3 public workshops around the region, and then a written, about 5 to 6 months opportunity for people to submit written suggestions to us, and that ended in June. And so from that solicitation, we got a number of very, very good suggestions. So the first lot of them here are TMDLs. They're not in any particular order. Ocean beaches and freshwater stream bacteria TMDL. You heard some about the new bacteria listings under the 303D list and your adoption of the integrated report recently. Humboldt Bay dioxin and PCB TMDL. Jacoby Creek sediment TMDL. Those last 3 are all geographically related, so the notion of connecting them through the revision of the Humboldt Bay Action Plan, which is very outdated, has come up. There was a suggestion that came in that we might consider revising the Scott and the Shasta TMDLs and action plans. You'll remember in our meeting in May, the City of Fortuna requested that we consider developing an exemption criteria for point source seasonal discharge prohibition, which applies in 3 of our water bodies in the region, in the Eel, in the Mad, and in the Russian. These are the water bodies where we allow point source discharge at all, but only during the wet weather season. We've also got a request that we develop a mixing zone policy for human health related constituents. In particular, the City of Ukiah is interested in the nitrate constituent. And this is in a different color to indicate that it's a project that's already on our training reviews, on the 2011 training review. There's been a suggestion that we consider developing a policy to address climate change and its potential impacts on water quality. And we've heard a little bit about the importance of climate change today. That we consider designating outstanding national resource waters. This was also already on our list. Stream and wetland system protection policy. Flow objectives. We've heard a lot about flow objectives this year. There was already on our list the idea of developing a narrative watershed hydrology objective. And now consideration of numeric flow objectives for individual water bodies. There's a suggestion to revise our biostimulatory substances objective to address biostimulatory conditions. And this is something that came out of the Klamath TMDL and recognition that it's a host of factors that together cause biostimulatory conditions that are the conditions we are concerned about with respect to water quality. And so the substances themselves interact with changes in temperature, changes in flow together to produce this condition, and that our objective might better reflect that. Suggestion to develop a policy to promote groundwater recharge. And again, we've heard some about that today. The importance of groundwater recharge to protection of water levels and the availability of water into the future, and also to address the potential impacts of climate change into the future. This is something that we think could be folded into our groundwater protection policy. It's been suggested that we develop a natural conditions clause, and this would help us to distinguish when we're implementing our water quality objectives between constituents that are elevated because there are natural conditions versus those that are elevated because of anthropogenic influences. And then we have an obligation to incorporate into our basin plan policies developed by the state board. And one of the policies that is under development right now is the development of an anti-degradation policy specific to groundwater. It may or may not come about in the next 3 years, but it's something that we need to keep our eye on. So let me tell you a little bit about the thinking process that we went through to rank these projects. we did not do any kind of numeric ranking. This is very much based on best professional judgment. But these are some of the questions that we asked ourselves when ranking these projects. Was it ranked high in the 2011 triennial review? Does it address new science, policy, or regulation? And then the next three are items related to, that came out of our internal visioning process. So does it promote healthy watersheds? Can it result in effective regulation? And will it promote strong partnerships? And all of these considerations are laid on top of just the basic reality related to staff resources. So the division of, you know, once we've ranked the projects according to these considerations, there are, you know, two lines drawn in there. One line that separates high priority from medium priority, and it's based essentially on identifying the top six projects, which are the number of projects we think we can undertake with the staff resources we have. So the high priority projects in the top six, the medium priority projects are the next six, and then the low priority projects are the, all those projects below the top 12. So this is what the table looks like. The high priority projects are divided into two categories. Well, the first is TMDLs, and the second are non-TMDL or other high priority basin limit projects. The projects that staff would promote as the highest priorities in the realm of TMDLs are continued work on the Russian River pathogen TMDL and on the Laguna de Santa Rosa nutrient, dissolved oxygen, temperature, and sediment TMDL. And then to add to our list, the development of a bacteria TMDL to address ocean, beaches, and freshwater streams. With respect to non-TMDL projects, the highest priority staff would propose would be to complete our work on the Water Quality Objective Update Amendment, which is the amendment Jeremiah talked about earlier. It's phase one of our surface and groundwater amendment that was on 2011 triennial review. It would update our chemical constituents objectives, add a groundwater toxicity objective, include dissolved oxygen revision for free-flowing streams, revise our surface water toxicity objective, and just to be clear, that's different than the state's work on the development of a toxicity objective and implementation plan, which is something they will be revising the inland surface waters plan to accommodate once they finish that project. And so our amendment of the toxicity objective is really just to correct some punctuation problems that will help to make more clear the meaning of the objective.
Alita, can you advance to the slides that show those by project?
Thank you. So again, these are the TMDL projects. This is phase one, the water quality objectives update amendment. And the third priority we would propose is the development of criteria for exemption from the seasonal discharge prohibition on point source waste discharge specific to the eel, with the notion that we can be look perhaps for the flow augmentation benefits that could come from such an exemption. As I say, the prohibition applies to three water bodies, and so as part of this project, we would need to evaluate whether or not we'd be interested in applying a similar exemption criteria to the prohibition in the Mad and the Russian rivers. And as part of this project, we would need to evaluate what the optimal flows are during the low flow season, which may result in numeric flow objectives for the waters that we deal with. As I say, the eel as the top priority and then evaluate whether the Mad and the Russian were also appropriately exempted this time. The fourth highest priority would be, staff would propose would be the development of the groundwater protection policy. This is again phase two of the groundwater and surface water task that was on the 2011 triennial review. As originally designed, it was meant to develop a policy for the discharge of waste to land, and to develop the programmatic approach for assessing and controlling salts and nutrients. But through this 2014 triennial review process, I think we would suggest that we add consideration of groundwater recharge, designate beneficial uses for individual groundwater basins, particularly look to those eight DWR designated medium priority basins to see whether that's appropriate, And then, of course, chapter four is our implementation plan chapter, which will allow us to do some editorial revisions. And then the fifth and the sixth projects would, that we propose would be to develop an in-stream flow objective for the Navarro River and to develop a policy to address climate change and its potential impacts on water quality. So as I say, those are six projects that we believe that we have staff, our staff resources are such that we can at least begin efforts on each of these topics within the next 3 years. Some of them we certainly can finish. The water quality objective update amendment that we hope to have to you in, you know, before the end of the fiscal year. And we will be certainly making progress on the other existing projects, Russian River and Laguna de Santa Rosa. And there's some interest from the city of Fortuna that we, if we do indeed take on the exemption criteria, that we can do that in short order as well. I wanted to highlight a few of the medium priority basin plan amendments in particular because the truth is none of these are medium priorities. They're all high priority projects, and really that line is only there as a result of the limitations due to our staff resources. Designating on the outstanding national resource waters has come up many times over the last several years in our training review process, as has the development of a mixing zone policy. We invested a lot of staff resources, as did in conjunction with Region 2, in the development of a stream and wetland systems protection policy, and we have a very, very robust body of work now available for us to consider to proceed with that project. The Humboldt Bay Action Plan has been out of date for a very long time, and as we've made progress on a number of the TMDLs in the area, and conditions have changed, and are concerned about climate change and it being our largest bay in the region, there's reason to consider updating that plan. I mentioned the Scott and the Chef TMDL staff proposed that that was a low priority, because we are so active in those basins and have so much you know, stakeholder involvement going on that the process seems to be working fine. But it was a project that was recommended that I wanted to highlight its disposition. And then I just wanted to say one thing about the statewide plans and policies. We've held on our triennial review list a number of statewide plans and policies, and it's become clear that the State Board is going to be looking to amend their inland surface waters plan, which is a statewide plan and is independently enforceable, rather than develop many of these objectives as policies that we then need to incorporate. So with that process, we no longer need to keep many of these projects on our own triennial review list and just simply you know, wait while they develop the projects and amend the statewide plan, and then we would just simply implement that statewide plan. There are a number of projects that have been completed or deleted from the 2011 list, and I wanted to highlight a couple of them. One is the Upper Elk River Sediment TMDL. We've heard a lot about that in the last couple of years, and we are nearing completion of the project, but staff proposed its deletion from the training review list because of the proposal that that project be adopted as a single action with a waste discharge requirement, so not requiring a basin plan amendment to accomplish. The same would be true for the Upper Little South Fork Elk portion of the Elk TMDL. That's a portion of the watershed that we're going to recommend for delisting, so it would no longer need to be on our triennial review list. And then I also wanted to highlight the recommendation that we revise the hatcheries policy. And that's based on the fact that we've interpreted the policy to not bar us from issuing NPDES permits where necessary. Here are a few projects that were suggested, but staff concluded didn't require a basin plan amendment. And so these are projects that will, you know, sort of enter into our office-wide planning process, but don't require any kind of basin planning. Protection of high quality water is under the anti-degradation policy. Looking at the effects of the expansion of the Gulf of the Farallones in terms of our control over waste discharges that will potentially affect that expanded protected waters from the tributary streams that have contact with it. There was a suggestion that we conduct sediment toxicity monitoring, particularly in the estuary of the Russian, and ambient monitoring of chemicals of emerging concern. At least with respect to the last one, we have plans now to implement some monitoring under swamps, so that's underway. And we'll be talking internally about how else to address these particular recommendations. I'll just say a couple things about the editorial revisions that we're going to be bringing to you in March. Chapter one is our introduction, and it includes a lot of language that describes our region. Back in 2007, you adopted editorial revisions to the chapter, and in 2012, you had brought to you revisions to chapter two. Both of those were meant to go together in a package to the state board. There were some procedural issues associated with the adoption in 2012 of chapter two. And in the meantime, since chapter one was revised, there were actually some new facts that needed to be updated. So we've gone through and cleaned those up. We've taken the chapter one version that you already adopted and added some additional suggested revisions. It includes updating some information that was now outdated, but the other thing we did was take a moment to confirm a number of the statistics that are listed in there, things like, you know, kilowatts generated by dams and number of acres of reservoir and those sorts of things. We've done a little bit of an analysis to update those numbers. And then in chapter two, you will see revisions that are largely identical to what you saw in 2012, but we'll ensure that the procedure is correct so we can move those on to the state board. So what we're hoping to get out of our workshop today is some recommendations and guidance on the priority ranking of these projects, both from you, the board members, as well as from other resource and public agencies and the public. This day will be a 45-day written public comment period that will end January 9th. And so that will be the point at which staff will be digesting all of the feedback and information we've gotten and be developing the final proposed list. And so with that, I will take any questions.
Board members, and we'll just run the.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Alita. We're kind of looking forward to the list coming out, so see what staff are thinking and where things need to be moved around. The first one that really jumped out at me and struck me as a real odd duck is Jacoby Creek. It's a very small, 20-some odd square mile watershed, and you know the effort to develop a TMDL for that, you know, as we've seen, you know, other Humboldt Bay watersheds and the time it takes to develop those. So bringing something new like that online, can you give me a little bit more information on why we're picking Jacoby Creek?
The best I can say about it is the recommendation that came out of the TMDL unit, and the notion is that you know, we've been working hard on the elk. We have a lot of information about freshwater creek, and the Jacoby Creek just sort of completes the suite for Humboldt Bay. And
exactly.
Then
we've got Salmon Creek too on the south side, which is actually a little bit larger than Jacoby Creek.
And I don't remember its listing status. Do you know?
I don't actually think Salmon Creek is listed.
Okay. Yeah, I can't say I came in first well prepared in the 303 list, so.
but the notion is specifically to look geographically at Humboldt Bay as, you know, our most important estuary in the region. And when Humboldt Bay dioxin and PCB TMDL came up, then, you know, wheels started spinning and thought, well, if we're going to be looking at Humboldt Bay, potentially updating the Humboldt Bay Action Plan, perhaps we should have a handle on all the sediment inputs and look at completing the sediment TMDL for the watershed.
Okay. I'll look forward to hearing or reading a little bit more on the justification for that. And then I guess the other one that jumped out as a little bit odd was taking some time to revise the Scott and Shasta TMDLs. And I guess I would question the benefit of modifying an existing TMDL versus the benefit we would get out of bringing something completely new online. So just a general comment there.
Yeah.
And again, this is, you know, not having the staff report and having been able to go through that justification. So there is, you may already have that teed up. So.
Well, and staff agrees with you. That it was a recommendation that came from, you know, our public solicitation process, and it appeared to us that we were doing plenty of good work in the Scott and Shasta, both, and the TMDLs were the springboard for that work. Mm-hmm. Really, our resources are better put elsewhere.
Okay, great. And then the last comment is for developing flow objectives for whatever river water body we're talking about. Please, if I can, you know, underscore coordinating with CDFW on that, because they're doing so much work right now in that arena, specifically for biological, meeting biological objectives during low flow. A lot of the methodologies that have been applied over the years have a 20, 30-year legacy with them, and there's a whole lot of research being done right now to look at new and improved ways of coming up with flow recommendations, and they're pretty cool. I've seen some draft reports on that. So just my recommendation to you is please coordinate very tightly with them on that.
Thank you. We certainly will.
Alita, thank you. I'm always struck by the importance of the basin plan. You know, when I first became a board member, I was aware of the basin plan, of course, and the importance of the revision and the keeping of the basin plan is always magnified to me when I look at a list like this. So I appreciate the body of work that is the tending and feeding of the basin plan to keep it current. At the same time, I'm impressed in looking at this list of the intention of going forward on the things that are running, the things that are being added to here seem appropriate. And then using also, I recognize the state board is working on policies that fit in here, and also removing things that are done. As with Jeff, the Shasta's got action plan. That's something that we have worked a lot on, as you recognize. To me, the question would be, a lot was put in the implementation plans for those two TMDLs specifically, things that were put in there that are just outdated. So I assume in looking at this, especially Shasta and Scott, is that there's things that, if anything, needed to be removed and cleaned up, right? An example is the ITP process, things that just aren't valid anymore, and that those were to be removed or could be removed as a revision. So as that goes, I think that that could be a move. Other than that, I would say steady on the course with those two TMDLs specifically. At the same time, I'm aware of the fact that this is a list of essentially an assessment of manpower, or people power, if I have to use a better word, maybe, that would be, I believe it was you that reminded me recently that, you know, you want to move things around on this list, then if you're going to move something up, then that means you're also moving something down. This list, in essence, is a pyramid to where you move things to the top, prioritize them, and move them off. So I do appreciate that as well. So I understand the body of work and the unit that you run and oversee in again, attending and feeding to this process, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. We are certainly looking for your thoughts on what high priority projects are. You know, if there is a project that does not, is not currently on the high priority list, but you really think should be there, then we would like to hear about that so that we can, you know, work through the thinking of how to make that happen.
Alita, remind me, when does a public comment period to this end?
January 9th.
January 9th, okay. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I just want to review a little bit the process, how far we've come, and we're now getting new dilemmas because we've come farther. First of all, when I got on this board, you got a little 8.5 by 11 sheet, 5-minute presentation, and that was that. So we've really gone to making this a thorough process, one that can be vetted by the public and by the board, and has grown to where the board can actually set some priorities ahead of time. And so I think that's really valuable. I do like the fact that you're putting at the end of it some matters that don't necessarily involve amending the basin plan, but where the board has spoken to on priorities. And one thing we don't have a good system right now is this is sort of the board setting priorities, but we have non-basin plan priorities. How do we combine those in a coherent decision-making process? And I have had people suggest the board do a strategic plan, and I'm not opposed to that. I'm throwing that out for board members to think about. Excuse me. But the problem with those is we don't need another mission statement. We need to be dealing with projects and how we integrate it. And I saw that especially in Humboldt Bay. There's a lot of non-basin plan aspects that need to be addressed. And the more we can bunch and bundle our efforts to clean up a watershed, the better. And so I'd like staff to think through how can we have this as a great planning tool for the board to communicate priorities, and we bundle different regulatory efforts together. Although you gotta keep the purity of the basin plan, and I think that adds discipline. I wanna say on adding the narrative approach and combining it with this as a expedited way to deal with basin plan, non-regulatory amendments, but that provide context is a great idea. That's an innovation, and we ought to do it. And I think it's going to be picked up by a lot of people, and Samantha deserves a little credit for that. And then I do think in looking at elk and freshwater, well, there are probably some of the hybrids where we're doing it both at the same time, maybe the road of the future, because you're combining all the efforts in a reasonable length of time regulatory process. So very quick comments. I couldn't quite figure out where's restoration policy. I know you mentioned it in there, but which number is it?
Restoration.
I'm just not able to pick it out. Or
well, I'll show you where to look.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. I just old eyes weren't foot tracking so good, you know.
Well, it's if you look on page 4, under the category called 2011 Basin Plan Amendment Projects Completed or Deleted, and then you look down about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines, develop aquatic ecosystem restoration project.
I gotcha.
Is removed from the list because we're going to bring it to you in January.
Okay.
So we would like to claim that as a near victory and remove it from
the list. Okay. My only comment is we better get it done or it's
going to be out of the list. Well, if in March when we bring you this list, if that is not done, then obviously.
Yeah, and I'm then the other thing is you mentioned on the designate groundwater beneficial uses. I'd like to know what you had in mind with that. But then you said medium basin designation by the Department of Water Resources. What does that mean?
I apologize, because that came up as part of the groundwater panel presentation prior to this one.
Okay.
And the Department of Water Resources has evaluated all the groundwater basins in the state and given them a high, medium, and low priority based on a number of characteristics, but related to you know, water quality, water use, their vulnerability, and I a number of characteristics. There are, and these, the high and medium priority basins are ones that will require these sustainability management plans.
Is the reason we're targeting medium because we don't have the high?
We have no high.
Okay, well then it makes a little sense why we're going below the high.
Exactly. We have 8 basins in our region that fall into that realm,
well,
and they're the,
no,
and they have.
Knock on wood that we're actually going to be taking planning before there's a problem. One last thing is in the updating of the Scott and Shasta rather than necessarily through a basin plan, I wonder whether some of the updates can be done through the narrative like we're trying with some of the others. And so if you could investigate that approach, I think that might be really good. Because I hate having things that aren't accurate and we go, well, it's not worth changing. Well, you know, it sort of isn't the best thing for the public to have something in your basin plan that's everybody knows is inaccurate.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be handled through a narrative.
Yeah.
And then I think that's a way to quickly move it, and we don't have to go through a to-do of reopening at the end of. Anyway, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sir, may I?
Oh, I'm going down the
okay.
line. I'm going to call him Board Member Massey. You're on board, Greg. Don't worry about it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Alita. This is, I too remember when it was one page, and it took 20 minutes. The only thing I can say is that looking at the high-priority TMDL, that Brenda Edelman and I are very, very happy, which is leave it right the way it is. Thank you.
Always pleased to make you happy.
You're just smiling today.
That's good.
Thank you, Alita, as always, very thorough and thoughtful. I always look forward and appreciate your presentations. I know how much work you put into them. Couple of questions. High priority task number 6. Develop a policy to address the effects of climate change on water quality. Going back to the criteria that you outlined at the beginning of your presentation, help me see the nexus between developing that policy and the question that apparently you asked internally is, you know, how or can it result in effective regulation? What's some of the thinking behind that? I appreciate that climate change is the bandwagon du jour. but at the same time, we need to be clear and concise on what we're putting together. It would help me understand what you were thinking when that got elevated to such a level.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the criteria I think that most applies is the development of new science. And so the addressing the development of new science to consideration of this project. The other criteria certainly apply too. And here's the procedure as we sort of outlined it, at least thinking about what kind of contract support we might need to proceed. You know, one of the first things we'd want to do is essentially a risk analysis using GIS to look at, given the variety of projections, model projections for our region, where on the landscape do we have vulnerabilities associated with climate change in terms of sea level rise, in terms of flood risks, in terms of location of infrastructure near seashores, in terms of alterations in pH or salinity, changes in vegetation and ecosystem, ecological composition. And then from that analysis, begin to look at what tools we have available to us to do a number of things. You know, one would be to protect human health and infrastructure, so look for ways, and some of these ways may not be basin plan related. We may be looking at things like permit conditions that we would start to implement in our discharge permits. But looking at ways to protect human health and infrastructure, also looking at ways to promote watershed health. And so, for example, considering things like riparian management, do we need to, beyond the temperature policy, do we need to consider saying more about riparian management and floodplain protection? And looking at how to promote ecosystem resilience. So identifying those places where we have pretty high ecological functioning because they're wilderness areas or they're wholly under the control of the Forest Service, say, and have limited impact. And are those places that we might designate as outstanding national resource waters so that they have a higher protected status and are able to, we can preserve their high quality for an extended period. So there are, with the notion of the exercise, the planning exercise, would be to come out with a suite of potential tools that we could employ, some of them non-regulatory, some of them implemented through our permit program, and some of them may indeed result in a need to amend the basin plan.
Thank you. Very, very well said. Certainly, the ecological literature is talking more and more about the importance of addressing resiliency in these various systems, so 100% behind you. The outstanding national resource waters, maybe this is more a question for Matt, but there's got to be some low-hanging fruit out there. Why do we keep kicking that down the road? Isn't there a way to value what a group has done or to recognize that we have just absolute immeasurable waters in our region? I mean, it seems that rather than just discounting it and not doing it, I'd like to see one. And how much, I guess I don't understand how much work could it take to go through that, just to try and have a goal of getting one and recognizing a real special place. We all know there's special places in our region.
Okay, can you give us an appreciation of that, Matt? Is that just a stroke of the pen, or is that?
This is for the outstanding national resource?
Yeah.
It's a little bit more than a stroke of the pen. staff, Holly Lundberg, before she retired, put together a body of work, kind of an analysis of what type of documentation is needed. And I actually haven't seen a product of that. Alita, perhaps you can speak to that. Mm-hmm. But I, just as a commentary, I agree with you that I think it's the right thing to do. And we need to find a way to.
From a personal opinion, I understand everybody's nose is to the grindstone, you're working hard. Sometimes it's kind of nice to look up and smell the roses and to give us all an opportunity to say, yeah, that's a special place in our home. I would certainly support that and ask you to find time put something aside. Something has to go off the list. And here's something I will diverge from my fellow board members. I'll take something off the list that these guys keep trying to put back on. As far as revising the Scott and the Shasta TMDLs, my opinion is it's working. Leave it alone. I'm in total agreement with staff. I think you've got, rather than revisiting a process that's working with limited time and limited resources, I'd rather see you moving ahead. But that's just my opinion. Thank you.
So if I could add a little bit to the ONRW discussion. So as Matt said, Holly did an analysis of the two ONRWs that we have in our state, which are Lake Tahoe and Mono Lake. And came.
What was the other one besides Tahoe?
Mono Lake.
Monterey Bay.
Oh, Monterey Bay, okay.
No,
Mono Lake.
Mono Lake, okay.
Down the east side of the Sierras. And we're not entirely clear on what all the alternatives are. We would need to work with OCC to come up with the proper approach. But from her analysis, she concluded that a basin plan amendment was not necessarily the only process that we could go through. And from her analysis, left in retirement with this for our consideration. And that is as part of the U.S. Forest Service waiver update next year to consider the Salmon River and the Middle Fork of the Eel River as potential waters to be designated as a.
What about the Smith?
Yeah.
The Smith is an obvious other choice, but it has different issues in terms of the designation because what the Forest Service has is that it's a single entity, and the Smith does not have that benefit. So it would be a more cumbersome process only just in terms of the outreach, having to work with all of the different constituents who would be interested in the process.
And then one other thought is, and I appreciate that we may not have to do it by basin plan and we may pick, but we also have review of beneficial uses, and it seems to me we could designate something in that. Now, I don't know how that fits with the state overall criteria because they're pretty fussy about it, but that's one other thing we could look at. But I'm more in favor of the Smith than some of the others just out of the gate.
Well, we have our scientific aid in planning now, picking up the work that Holly produced and combing through it, and then she will make a recommendation. And we're talking with the timber program staff about the Forest Service waiver and whether that might be a good vehicle.
And then this reminds me on an unrelated subject, but on the non-basin plan, I think an evaluation of our marine resources approach, which I know you're already working on separately, could be added to the list.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions or suggestions?
And then the only other fear I have is, all this allocates staff time, and the more we put down below, the more we're building staff time beyond the basin plan. But I think it's a sunk cost if we want to look at it more comprehensively. But.
Well, and I think we have done a lot of work in the last, I'm going to say maybe 5 years in planning, where we do a lot more collaboration across programs. So we've had folks in the MPDS, BDR unit working with us on the chemical constituents objective project. We've had folks in the cleanups unit working with us in the groundwater protection. And I think we'll be doing more of that in the future. And so there is a way to perhaps expand our resources a little bit by doing that kind of collaboration.
So I want to thank you again. I think it's an outstanding effort.
Thank you.
And I would hope board members would make input throughout the process ahead of time, because this is a very complex document and was a lot to take in.
Yes, and I'll apologize for not having the staff report available now, but it will be ready in the next few days, and that will give you all the background thinking behind each of the projects and their ranking. And anytime you'd like to either talk with me individually or send another email with your recommendations, I'd be very pleased to see them.
Thank you. Any other board comments or questions? I'm going to open it up to the public. I hear that we have a representative from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife that wants to speak and has requested more than 3 minutes.
I actually don't think he's here as well. withdrawn.
Okay, so we have a request, but nobody to fulfill it. We're
but we're gaining time.
Yeah. We will start off with the speaker cards that are turned in, and we'll see whether Doug Culbert, City of Fortuna, is here.
Hello, board. I appreciate the time to come here. I want to first say that that the team put this together for us. I'm sorry, Doug Culbert, City of Fortuna. Says right there, I can't read. Did you get that, City of Fortuna?
We got the can't read part.
Got it. the team put this presentation together, and I'm just the messenger. I was enlisted to make the drive down here, so I just want you to know that this is a team effort. But the City of Fortuna is pleased with the triennial review draft proposed Basin Plan Amendment Project Priority List and supports staff's recommendations. The city has faced a near-term compliance project with expenditures in excess of $20 million. Preliminary analysis indicates that year-round addition of advanced treatment effluent may have the lowest impact on our ratepayers while offering the potential to enhance the beneficial uses of the Hill River. The city is facing a choice to either invest a large sum of money in enhanced secondary treatment improvements with new land discharge system, or to invest in advanced wastewater treatment and scientific analysis of adding advanced treatment water to the Hill River year-round. Based on analysis completed to date, year-round discharge of advanced treatment water appears to offer the maximum benefit to both the people and the waters of the state. Recent dry season flows have been historically low, and publicly operated treatment works along the river are powerless to augment critical flows, those low flows, even when advanced waste treatment technologies are capable of reliably producing high-quality effluent. With advanced wastewater treatment methods, it may now be possible to produce effluent clean enough to enhance beneficial uses in the Hill River. The Regional Board concurs currently has a unique opportunity to amend the basin plan and evaluate a municipal advanced treatment water flow augmentation project on the Hill River, which is especially relevant given the current drought emergency, as well as the fact that the level of treatment has been drastically increased since the inception of the basin plan. If the basin plan amendment allowing for an exemption process for the seasonal discharge prohibition is not included in the high priority list of projects for the triennial review, treating the city's effluent to a higher quality and discharging the Hill River to augment flows will not be an option, and the city will only be able to consider other alternatives of piping the treated wastewater miles away from the Hill River. Therefore, the city strongly urges you to support the ranking of an exemption process from the seasonal discharge prohibition on point source waste discharge to the Hill River as one of the three highest priorities. And there are a few things that I remember growing up, a thing that people said to me. One that sticks close in my mind is my mother telling me, "Don't you ever do that again." And I remember that very vividly. Two other things that are close in my mind is when I sat here several years ago, and Mr. Massey told me as I was working for Ferndale, "I don't ever want to see you here again until you fix your problem." The other thing was, Mr. Giusti at the last meeting that we were at, where he told us that he would hold our feet to the fire, that the board would hold our feet to the fire and make sure that we provide the enhanced treatment that we need, and that really stuck and resonated with me. And so with that said, we are serious and we don't take this challenge lightly. And so the City of Fortuna will be a willing partner and will work with the Regional Board staff to develop a plan to establish the criteria for the exemption from the seasonal discharge prohibition. I thank you for being able to talk in front of you, and I'll answer any questions if you have any. Any questions by board members?
Just a quick one. Thank you for that. I guess something else to take home and remember on your drive home. if
this is going to hurt.
No, it's not.
It only hurts for four
hours or so driving home.
I got my my pen ready.
No, it's, you'll be able to remember this, you know. I guess for someone like me to want to work with you on something like this, to get a change in the statute and to move effluent into the Eel River, you know, the bottom line would be, you know, would I let my kids swim in there? And so the thing is, would you let your child swim in there? I mean, that's the level of water quality that I think we have to keep in mind and what we're shooting for during the low flow period.
Thank you.
Just a thought.
Answer? Yes.
Any other comment?
Yeah, just a comment. And you know, I don't want to, no predetermination or anything, but just more of an acknowledgement, kudos to the staff for getting where we are now. It's on the list. And you know, you came before us, it was well over a year ago, and pitched the idea. And we said, well, hey, we got the triennial review coming up. That might be the appropriate vehicle to try to get them on there. So, you know, we're here now. It's under good consideration. And in that interim time, you guys have put together a very substantial body of work justifying it and supporting this. So it's, we remember that. So thanks.
Okay. And then I wanted to ask staff whether the priority three, developing numerical flow objectives to address low flow conditions, focus on the Eel River sufficiently broad to cover consideration this issue if need be, and perhaps again under a narrative as opposed to, I'm not sure. I just wanted to ask whether that's possible.
So we've included as part of this project the recognition that part of the analysis needs to be, you know, what are the flow conditions that are needed in the water body? And from that kind of criteria, would discharge of effluent be in support of that flow condition?
So that is,
so,
that's
so we are drawing, sorry to interrupt, but we're not quite committing that it will actually, that it needs to be a flow objective. It may be a flow threshold that doesn't have to be an objective that gets basin, that adopted into the basin plan to meet the needs for this exemption criteria.
So in summary, I think Fortuna should be very happy.
We are.
Are there people that wait 10 years to get in the top six? So I think that will get due consideration, the proposal, and I hope maybe you can remember that part on the drive home.
Oh, yeah. we were high-fiving each other at the beginning of the week, so we understand what this means to get on the list, and we're, like I said before, we're very serious about doing what we need to do to make it happen.
Right. Well, thank you for taking the time to testify.
Thank you for listening.
Grant Wilson, Earth Law Center.
Thank you, Chair Corbett and board members. My name is Grant Wilson. I'm the Outreach and Policy Coordinator with Earth Law Center. And thank you for having this important workshop today. I'm here today to urge you to include the watershed hydrology objective as a high priority basin plan amendment project. I also ask that the watershed hydrology objective and other flow objectives be designed to protect the most sensitive beneficial uses as called for by the Clean Water Act. As we know, many North Coast waterways are desperate for more water to protect our salmon and steelhead and other aquatic species. Developing a region-wide in-stream flow objective would help guide regional actions on flows. It will also support the State Water Board in making regionally appropriate water rights decisions. Thus, the watershed hydrology objective should be a high priority project rather than a medium priority one. So when developed, a North Coast flow objective must comply with the Clean Water Act provisions regarding beneficial uses. So as you know, the Clean Water Act requires states to develop water quality standards that include beneficial uses, criteria or objectives in California that protect those uses, and anti-degradation requirements. US EPA regulations make clear that where there are multiple uses, states must adopt objectives that protect the most sensitive uses. This is true for flow objectives, which also must be approved by the US EPA for Clean Water Act consistency. The Supreme Court has ruled on the Clean Water Act applicability to flows, finding that the distinction between water quality and quantity is artificial. Thus, if state policy allows waterways to be over-diverted such that one or more beneficial uses are being violated, and the water quality standards are being violated. State water law that allows for beneficial uses to be balanced away is inconsistent with the Clean Water Act's mandate to fully protect beneficial uses. And EPA has already done extensive work on this topic in other regions. US EPA Region 4 states that in-stream flow water quality standards adopted consistent with the Clean Water Act could be used for the, quote, protection of all designated uses and for application in all other purposes under the Clean Water Act. And in US EPA Region 1, they've added that flow standards can support other conservation efforts, such as by integrating fishery management or restoration plans into state standards. And other states have already applied the Clean Water Act to improve flows. And as of 2012, 8 states and 3 tribes have adopted in-stream flow water quality standards under the Clean Water Act with active US EPA support. So considering the dire need for state and regional direction that will bring more flow to North Coast waterways and the strong legal impetus of the Clean Water Act and the U.S. Supreme Court and the clear precedent that's been set by other states and tribes, we ask that the North Coast Board apply these concepts to the development of a watershed hydrology objective that protects the most sensitive beneficial uses, and that they prioritize this activity as a high priority project in the 2014 triennial review. Thank you so much for your work on these issues.
Thank you. Board members, questions, comments? Okay.
Maybe.
Just a question. So I see that it's being proposed under other high priority basin plan amendments that the numeric flow objectives for the focusing on the eel and possibly for the mad and the Russian are being considered. Are you suggesting that be expanded? I guess in your mind, what is a watershed hydrology objective going to provide?
Speaking specifically to the watershed hydrology objective, that's ranked number 9 now as a medium priority ranking, and the numeric criteria specific for the Eel River, or at least as an initial focus, is great, but we think region-wide objectives would be preferable in order to provide protections for all the waterways in the North Coast.
Mr.
Chair?
Yes, Legal Counsel Olson.
Thank you. Just briefly, we're going to have a workshop on flow coming up. I appreciate your comments and recommend that you attend. I just wanted to point out, though, that the objectives that already exist in our basin plan are sufficient right now to make water right decisions and water diversion decisions. And so I think our focus toward the numerics and trying to identify the actual number that you need in a stream, we're trying to focus on that more than just a narrative objective, recognizing that the reason why we're not doing in-stream flows is not because we don't have another objective in our basin plan. Does that make sense? So we already have a plenty that could be and are used all the time by water rights to impose flows and decisions like that.
Any further comments or questions? Hey, Brenda Adelman.
I have not been able to submit comments on this or carefully track this issue, but I have a lot of concerns about the low flow issue. I certainly appreciate the sophistication of the comments of the gentleman before me, and from what I could tell, I support everything he said. First of all, I would ask the question, and I'm also talking about the same item, I believe, 14A, where it calls for developing numeric flow objectives to address low flow conditions. I wonder what is meant by evaluate MAB and rush rivers, and whether there is consideration being made for objectives for the Russian River. And I'm even more disturbed by the rationale needed to support exemption from seasonal discharge prohibition. I don't know if that would apply to the Russian River, but it certainly has a history of being an issue all the time I've been doing this work for 35 years. So basically, there's a lot of potential in these sentences for trouble in my mind, and I have a lot of concerns about it, and I know, and I will look forward to the workshop I will certainly attend on the low flow issue. But what I see happening in the state now is this idea that, well, we have a water problem, so let's dump all our wastewater in the drinking water supply. And when I saw Leslie Stahl drink wastewater that had been treated for 45 minutes on TV, it made me sick. I just can't imagine that that water in 45 minutes got rid of all the endocrine disrupting chemicals and other things that are not being tested for or monitored. So I see in the state this move to treat wastewater, tertiary wastewater especially, as though it's perfectly clean. And I know there are all kinds of rules about that, but it's an attitudinal thing. It's like the verbiage being used is, this is recycled water, implying that it's totally clean, safe water. And I think that there needs to be a lot of care taken in the direction this is going. So in terms of the basin plan, I don't have enough detailed understanding of how this plays out. I know that there was talk about looking at the flow issue on a project by project basis, but I don't know how this item would apply to the Russian River, and I just feel a lot more information is needed. I did not make an attempt to speak to, I'm done, but I just want to say one more thing. I did not make an attempt to talk to Alita about this. I've had a lot of other things going on in my life and just was not able to give it the attention I would have liked. Thank you very much.
Dara Isupa from Russian River Watershed Association.
Opportunity to comment on the triennial review of the basin plant, or of the basin plant for the North Coast region. I also have to acknowledge all the good work of the regional board staff. They have been great to work and collaborate with. So the Russian River Watershed Association would like to reiterate a past request that was outlined in the letter submitted earlier this year in April. The letter formally requested that the board prioritize the development of a policy for mixing zone credits for human health constituents in the triennial review. It is currently ranked number 8 and categorized as a medium priority project as it was in 2011. We believe that the board and the regulated community have come a long way in laying down the groundwork for a mixing zone credits policy. The board also recognizes the efforts made, as they have indicated the status of the mixing zone policy as having substantial staff and stakeholder project development. The development or groundwork includes a 2006 document entitled Regulatory Mixing Zone Approaches for the North Coast Region, which provides technical guidance for the development of mixing zone studies. It was developed in consultation with the regional board and peer review before completion. In 2011, the regulated community completed another document entitled Evaluation of the Mixing Zone Policy for Human Health Related Constituents, also developed in consultation with the regional board, and provides a strong basis for completing the proposed policy within this triennial review cycle. Finalizing the comprehensive work presents an opportunity to provide regulatory relief for the small utilities within this region. As the board considers its work plan for this triennial review, we encourage you to prioritize the completion of the policy. So I would like to just thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Any board member comments or questions?
Just maybe a question more for Matt. Help me understand the mixing zone. What are we talking about? A receiving water, getting treated water, and the dilution rate that's involved, or is it something else?
No, that's exactly it. So it's in the receiving water, and it's the concept is that there be an allowance for exceedances of receiving water limits, recognizing that, that there's a zone, a geographic area where there's mixing, and that that the beneficial use that should be evaluated is outside of that mixing zone. That's the concept for the request.
So getting back to Sittleman's comments, I mean, I agree that the Russian is different than the eel, and they shouldn't all be lumped together. I mean, I'm in total agreement there. So this mixing zone policy would be region wide. Is that what you're asking for, or specific to the Russian?
Specific to the Russian.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Can I ask a question though, Matt? We adopted though at a Delta Pond outfall for City of Santa Rosa, there is an exception to the mixing zone requirement, right? That we did that, what, 3 years ago or something? And that had a substantial amount of work that went behind that, that used a site-specific information that was put forth about how we went about adopting that. There was quite a process in place, I recall.
Yeah, Mr. Norton, David Leland, it was in the Santa Rosa permit before the last cycle, so that would have been 6 years ago, roughly, and it was just for nitrate.
It was nitrate.
It was very limited, and it was limited to human health, the human health criteria. So, and that's the only, I think that's the only instance that we have at this point, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Thank you for your testimony. Tim Erickson, City of Ukiah.
Hi, Tim Erickson, Director of Public Works for the City of Ukiah on the same issue with the mixing zone study. And just for clarity, that the mixing zone is already accepted for other constituents, and this we're asking for it to be accepted for the nitrate as well, for the human, the same as Santa Rosa, but actually changing it in the basin plan so that that's acceptable. The city's situation is we just did a $57 million upgrade to our plant, which put somebody in a single person in a mobile home with a sewer bill in the range of $100 a month. If we don't have this mixing zone study approved, we're facing a $22 million issue to deal with the nitrate problem. And so that's pretty much takes us off the chart as far as, and this is a policy that's been approved for other things. This here is the study that's already been done in concert with the staff. This was done in 2006. All we're asking for is the formal review and this to be included in the, right now it's number 8, but have this included in the high priority so it can be reviewed and adopted.
Mr. Chair, can I ask if the basin plan is an intentionally long process? I mean, it's involved, it's a basin plan amendment that goes through administrative law, and I believe all the way through. In the instance of something like Ukiah, is there the opportunity to do something similar to what Santa Rosa did and take them singularly instead of taking it as a basin plan amendment that is more worldview for the region?
So I believe that, this is Matt St. John, that certainly is, well, first of all, you're correct, that basin plan amendments an involved process. It has to go from the regional board, approval by state board, and then Office of Administrative Law. Since there was an exception as part of the Santa Rosa permit, that demonstrates that is an option to do it under other permit terms.
So in the instance of Ukiah, I mean, this has been in play for a while. You said 2006, is that right, Tim?
That's right.
I mean, from that standpoint, it sounds like, and I'm just putting this out there, it's an option that they could potentially come to staff and say, look, we want to go not through a basin plan, but have it as a revision to permit. Is that the process to go through here? I'm just curious.
Yes, I think there's possibility there.
Okay. It sounds like there's some options here.
Okay. That the only other part of that would be that I know the Russian River Watershed Association and other users along the Russian are also hoping for this amendment, so that would be a reason to get it.
Question though, Manager. Tim, I don't have the benefit of background on this. I mean, when you said the nitrogen thing, So, you know, knowing that nitrogen and nitrates are biostimulatory agents, what's the issue with those compounds? And give me the 1 minute version of what you're facing.
Well, I'm an engineer, not a scientist, so I can't give you much of it. But what basically right now we, when the effluent comes out, we're getting, we have to have the limit to the point of that the entire river is now at 100% of what's coming out of the pipe, when we only discharge one hundredth of the river's flow. So within, you know, 7 feet, we're talking about, you know, a totally diluted nitrogen issue. And so, you know, we're being judged as if the river is completely to that limit of what's being put into the river, but it's mixed immediately, and so changes within no time.
Thank you.
Any other board member questions or comments? Okay, I think that concludes this agenda item, and that would conclude the.
Can I make one last request to staff that we get the staff report, of course, when it comes out? Please email it to us so we have it. There is a public comment period that's open for, it sounds like, January 9th.
So 45-day public comment period closes the
19th.
Excellent. And I think that's important, as we're getting a lot more public input than we used to, so that it's more important to see it early.
Chair.
Yeah.
Just a quick, because Mr. Corbett and I have been around here since dirt.
I thought it was a time for it.
Well, it really comes down to the basin plan is how we intend to use our resources. And our basic resource is human time. And Mr. St. John, can you give us an idea of what our staffing is, what our staffing has been? And then I would note that we have things that 10 years ago we didn't have. One of the issues that will be coming before us is cannabis. We didn't have that before. We've had other things, climate change. If we're to use our resources, it is incumbent that we do this plan and work that plan really on the priority things that we have. So what do we have? What do we have in terms of resources?
So we currently have just about 76 positions working for us here at the North Coast Regional Board. Those include the four new positions for the cannabis program, two new positions that we got this year for in our 401 water quality certification program, and one new position for our timber program are included in that 76. We have approximately three positions that are dedicated to TMDL development projects, and three staff, additional staff, that are devoted to other basin planning type efforts. So six, and then with Alita's supervision, seven total planning staff. And we don't have, there is no indication that's going to be increased at any time soon. Did that answer the question?
It does. And just because I'm aware of it, I think John is too. Where have we been in terms of staff?
So in the early late 2008 or 2009, I think we were at the maximum for our organization at about 130 staff, and through attrition.
And then I just had one clarification. I assume the supporting documents we got have been circulated to staff as well regarding the case tomorrow. We have these documents, and I just assume that staff has seen them, but I want to make sure.
Which case are you?
It says item 7, supporting document 3, dischargers case in chief.
Yes, for that item, all the advisory team and the prosecution team both have all of the materials.
I thought they would, but I just wanted to make super sure.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And I got to give Bill Massey back, or he'll get mad at me. I don't want to take it. All right. Any other items? Meeting adjourned.